a special edition of Nerdificent. We are going to be covering Endgame. So if you haven't seen Avengers Endgame, you might want to not listen to this episode on Endgame. I am one half of your host, Danny Fernandez, and sitting across from me.
Yeah, if you want to wait, ready to talk about Endgame.
I know you really wanted to talk about this last week on our other episode.
Yeah, like I was just excited for people to know. It's about to happen.
And we are joined by pop culture critic. You have seen her words on Playboy, Polygon, The Hollywood Reporter, Teen Vogue. She was here for our Captain Marvel episode. It is Joelle Monique.
Hey, what's up? I'm so excited to talk about this movie.
It's a lot to chew on. You're a resident critic. You know?
Yes.
You've been through it for a few. We did Ant-Man and the Wasp, Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've did all the movies after Infinity War up until...
It's true. I'm your Marvel person, and I feel really special about that.
Yeah, so when? How many times have you seen it once now or twice?
I have seen it once.
Okay.
But it was a lasting experience, and haven't stopped talking about it since. Like, even Game of Thrones Day, I was still talking about Avengers, so... I feel good about it.
I know it really it also sat with me as well. It was something that, honestly, even though it was 3 hours, didn't feel like it.
Not at all.
Didn't feel like 3 hours.
Yeah.
So I guess we could just dive right into it. How did you feel about it compared to all the other MCU films?
So I went back and watched most of the MCU films before, and then every film that was very specifically inside of this film, I watched again afterwards. And I felt, so this movie we're wrapping up so many storylines that it has like this very like lovely prominent place. Like it's the end of like the great Tony Stark, like emotional daddy drama saga. And then also you get the end of Captain Marvel's like sacrificial journey. But in the same way that I feel like Ultron left people with a lot of questions, this movie left me with a lot of questions. However, I will say I rewatched Ultron and I didn't have those questions anymore because Ultron was setting up questions to be answered later. It's hard to judge a series in the middle. Like, as an end of a chapter, you're like, so good. Like, I feel like we got where we needed to be. You know, I have questions about some of the deaths, but overall, I was like, you know, this is a really solid place to land. We'll have to see where they pick up some of the strands, some of the questions later. It's hard to sort of judge the film in a series when you don't know how it's going to end.
Yeah, for me, it was great. I think it did a great job closing the book on just kind of the original MCU crew, like, you know, Cap, you know, wrap that story up, which was beautiful to me as a fan of the comics, because that doesn't happen in the comics. In the comics, Cap just keeps fighting. He never gets that back. So for him to be able to get that back in the movies was like an extra surprise it didn't see coming.
Unlike Batman, it makes sense for him to rest.
Yeah.
This is a decision Captain America would make.
Iron Man, you know, finally getting wrapped up, which, you know, was great. I think I called that. I said they were both going to die. I mean, they both didn't die, but they both kind of got wrapped. Their stories wrapped. And, you know, it seems like they're going to kind of bunch Thor with Guardians, maybe, which is the interesting thing. Black Widow, dead. I think she's gone. I think they smoked her. The movie that's on the docket is a prequel. So they're just going to do the prequel. It does seem weird to do a prequel
if she's smoked.
But, I mean, I feel like...
A prequel coming after time travel, knowing that the Soul Stone is an exchange, and that Captain went to place all the stones back exactly where they picked them up. She could easily pop back up.
Yeah.
I just don't think that it's necessary, though. Sometimes I feel like it's okay to, that's like real life. It's okay sometimes to retire or lose our heroes. That happens in real life. We lose people that we care about in real life. And it's funny that I know that you wrote for Playboy. I just wrote a piece for them on how Endgame tackles failure and mortality, and mainly when I watched this movie, I watched it as someone that has depression, seeing how they were put into this bleak world where they suddenly found themselves purposeless. they suddenly had no purpose anymore. They were so lost and didn't know how to carry. How do you carry on when you feel like you have no more purpose? How do you carry on after grief? How do you carry on after loss? And so that, to me, when I walked out and everyone's like, how did you like it? And to me, it was like, oh my gosh, it spoke to me from that place of it was the most vulnerable I had ever seen them. That to me is the side that I wanted to see. And yeah, we've had loss in other films, but this was the first time where it was really like, this might not work out.
Yeah. That 5-year jump is what really kind of screws with your head at the beginning. Cause at first it's like, okay, well we're picking up and we're going to find us. There's nothing for them to do.
Yeah, that was a great moment. And there were just lots of good breadcrumbs within all that. Like, you know, Cap saying how this is a second loss for him because he had that loss. And it really did. There were a lot of setups that were great. There were some a little heavy-handed. Like, I don't think Tony Stark needed to say, and don't die in the process. I was like, all right, this is. But I always say those ones are for the people in the back who are like, what's going to happen? It's like, oh. There is something that's been making waves recently that didn't ping for me, but it seems like a lot of people feel a certain way. And it's about Fat Thor.
I love Fat Thor.
That's my thing, too, is like, you know, I saw no problem because they didn't have any fat jokes. And then at the end of the, him being fat felt like it was an effect of his like depression, which he had. He was depressed because he felt that he couldn't save people. And then when he gets good, he doesn't get skinny. It's not like he gets lightning zapped his body. And then they're saying like, oh, fat is depressed. It just was an effect of it. And he just was totally...
He gets to say the line, like, I'm still worthy while he's fat. Like, he gets his hammer back. Like, it's not, and it's not anything that anybody makes fun of him for.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. They're mostly just concerned about, like, so you're drinking a lot, we noticed. And we need you to come back to Earth and, like, do your job.
I pointed that out in Candy Dinner, that there was no, like, direct fat jokes. Mm-hmm. It was just all his drinking. Like, that's, and yet, like, there seems to be this big, you know, thing. And I can't control how anybody feels about it. Sure. But it gets to the point where it's, like, people are kind of like, you know, him being fat is a fat joke. And it's, like, at some point, it's, like, you're almost, like, not allowing people to show people larger on screen. I don't know.
I'll split hairs with it and say this. It, on the one hand, like, you have to be media literate. You need to like look at things and see like how they're portraying it.
Yeah.
And to that effect, like, no, I personally don't think that anybody's making fun of Thor's body. On the other hand, I know there's a lot of frustration as we watch a lot of very thin people put on body suits and portray fat people. And there are a lot of fat actors who could be doing these roles. This is not one of them though.
Yeah.
Like, we couldn't replace, you're not going to replace Chris Hemsworth. It's just never going to happen.
Yeah.
So did the body still look great? No, we don't see a lot of fat bodies. I think we're still trying to figure out how to portray them in a way that with dignity, essentially, and not play it for jokes. They got pretty close.
For someone who hit 280 and hit 280 muscular, that was one thing that people were like, oh, that looked weird. It's like, no, that's like, I have a picture in my phone of my body looking like
but
that.
But it looked kind of plasticky in places.
I
mean, but
that, I feel like that's just the limitations of like the uncanny valley with like
we
latex.
We make alien faces. We should be able to make believable fat like stomachs.
The one that I've saw people point out was that his mom told him to eat a salad, you know, at some, she was like, and please eat a salad. But for me also, she said, like, when she looks at him, because he is depressed, like you said, if he's intoxicated, he has become an alcoholic, like, he, as someone that has depression, he hasn't showered, like, and so to me it's almost like when she caresses his face and she's like, you know, the future hasn't been good to you, I think she's just looking at the hardship that he is, you know, not necessarily his body, but just him as like, your soul has been crushed, you're intoxicated, my child here is like severely depressed, you know, like, please take care of yourself. I think, like, that might be the commentary more there.
It's a very mom thing to say, too. Like, take care of yourself.
Yeah,
like,
please don't down a bunch of Coors Light.
It certainly wasn't like, oh, my God, no one's going to love him now.
And the thing was that she loved him so much. She knew, like, this is my son, you know, and you're not, and I, you would never, you know, it was interesting because she did say, you are a failure, but, and he was like, that's harsh, but it was so fascinating the way that it's like, it's okay to fail.
Yeah.
It's okay to fail. You know, that doesn't mean you're not worthy. And that's why when he reached for Mjolnir, he was still able to get it.
Yeah.
Like, you are still valid.
Definitely.
I know. I mean, in that, like, I think I've made this comment before. Like, art always is going to affect people differently. People are going to get it differently. And, you know, no one knows the intent. And you just, sometimes you just see something a certain way. And, you know, that's how you feel about it. And I can't argue that. But that did kind of, like, shake me a bit, because I think it shook me more, like, maybe if it was something that I just was like, huh, and moved, I think it shook me more because I came out of it thinking like, oh, they did a good job with not doing right. the hacky thing and really kind of really letting it be the effect of his depression and not have it. But I think Joelle just knocked it out the park on that. Story-wise, you know, yeah, I think just hidden, like everyone said, didn't feel like 3 hours. It really just flowed. It kept giving us everything we needed. And as a, like, finale to 11 years of movies, I gotta say, I love that just, like, as a writer, it was kind of like almost just storytelling porn that you end that you go back to one of the most prolific moments in the Avengers, 2012, the New York, when we first meet the Avengers, and we just have essentially these developed characters, like having Steve Rogers from 2012 fight Steve Rogers now, so you can actively see how
America's
not only that, but the way they tease, like, this is a, like, I talked to a bunch of people who are like, well, I've seen all the movies, and I still feel like, I'm like, this is a movie designed for people who watch these movies, like, 6 times.
Yeah.
Because the little, like, when Steve gets in the elevator, and you're like, are we gonna, is
yeah.
it point two?
Yeah.
And, like, the way they build that tension for fans of being like, we know what you want to see. No, he learned his lesson. It's just a simple Hail Hydra, and he's out. I was like, this is so effing good. And you
yeah.
get, like, 1,000 little moments like that where it's, oh, like, yeah. teased. Did you see this coming?
One of my favorite things was getting to see Bruce versus, like, how much the Hulk has changed.
Oh, yeah.
He, out of everyone, I would say him and Nebula's story arc are my favorite. Like, Bruce, so to have the fact that he went back in that time when we first saw the Avengers, and now he has rectified this part of himself that he hated so much that he has now learned to live with, and seen as now a strength, something that he, and I don't know if you remember in the first Avengers, he actually said that he tried to kill himself. I mean, that's really dark. He says that he shot a bullet in his mouth and that the Hulk spit it out.
Yeah.
And now there's a scene, it's so pretty, where Nat is like, you know, where Natasha, where Black Widow, where he, Bruce is nervous about the time travel. And she says, well, you did this. And she's talking about him being able to be Bruce and the Hulk at the same time. And she says, I remember a time when that was almost impossible. And so for me, it's like, oh my gosh, the fact that this man has finally been able, this, like, tormented soul has finally been able to come to terms and, like, be both of these things at the same time. And you're really able to see that by these flashbacks, like, how much of our heroes have evolved.
Well, also, it's great because it's just such a metaphor with so many things where you try and fight this part of you.
Yeah.
You try and fight. You was like, I want to be not this. This part of me, I don't want to be. And finally, learning to love that part of yourself and be one with it and see how it complements you as a human. That is just a beautiful message within itself. And, I mean, this, the time stuff was real cool, mostly because the pacing of it was great. We got the fun of the 2012, and then we almost forget that they went to Vormir, or was Vormir?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we almost forget. They time it so perfectly for it to be the last one. We forget the one thing that they taught us about Vormir
yeah.
in the last movie, because we had all this stuff happen, and then you see Red Skull, and you're like, oh no.
See, I didn't forget, and I knew immediately. I'm like, okay,
also remembered, yeah.
One of these two people is going to have to die. And I feel like it is really challenging because, like, if we look at the way Hulk is set up, like, Hulk is the exact opposite mental space as literally everyone else. The writers did a really great interview with the New York Times where they took everybody's, like, most pressing questions, asked the writers, and they responded. So one of them was talking about, like, you know, when did you guys decide to take this route with the Hulk? Because his story, he hasn't had a solo story. It's chopped up amongst, like, about four
right.
different stories to make this arc happen for him. And if you remember in the trailers for Infinity Wars, you have Hulk in the Hulkbuster running around instead of just Bruce Banner inside of the Hulkbuster with his tiny head, giant metal body thing going on. Originally, they were going to put that storyline at the end of Infinity Wars. So he was going going to have that transformation and be kind of like reach this equilibrium, then the snap would have happened and then we would have come back here, which wouldn't have given his character a lot to do. So it's like really smart of them to put it here. I really wish we had had more of that formation, that thought process with Nat, who is also a character who has yet to have a solo movie, who hasn't had her story really spread out. She hasn't had a great arc across. Like, you're introduced to her in Iron Man 2, Tony hires her as an assistant. Then, you know, she's in Avengers and we get a lot more of her backstory. We get a little bit of a teaser of like what her life was like in Ultron. Then she's kind of hanging out with Cap and being like, you should date again. That would be fun for you, right? And we see her kick total ass, which is awesome. Nothing happens to her in all this time. And the writer said that in this one, she's supposed to be a recluse. Did you get that?
Kind of. I mean, she did. I felt like she has, out of everyone, she's the one that like had her walls up, that she felt like she had to remain strong. Because remember, like, it was clear everybody was like, are you okay? Everyone kept like, you know, like checking in on her. And I remember there was a scene where Cap was like, she was like, well, if I don't do this, who's going to do this? And he was like, maybe you, no one needs to do this, you know? And for me, it was just like, she, I know what you're saying, though. And I feel like I just lost my train of thought. But
I was gonna say, as they've explored other like mental disorders or disabilities, and they've explored them so well in such a short amount of time, agoraphobia is presented in a lot of different ways, and they sort of hinted at it. But again, they didn't give Nat anything to do. They had all these characters sort of reacting to her. Nat. But like, let's see her try to maybe go after Clint, because that's the only really clue I got, was when they're like, someone's going, should go after him. And I'm like, well, it seems like something Black Widow should be able to take care of pretty easily. Like, yeah, that's sort of how they met. It's weird that she's not doing it. But it, to me, it never got to that, again, that fully fleshed out point. And I feel like that's her whole problem in the entire saga, Infinity Saga, is that we never get to know her as a person.
Well, I was going to say, one of the saddest scenes when she does pass, and Cap, it was like, how do your friends not even know you? Because Cap was like, does she have any family? And they said, yeah, us. And I was just like, how do you not know if she has? But that, I mean, it did up in that with the Soul Stone, when Clint says something about her dad's name and she's like, I didn't know it. You know, so it's clear that she, I know what you're saying. It seems like maybe she was the one that she didn't really get. Her death is probably one of the saddest, because it was like she didn't really get to reconcile a lot of that, or, you know.
And we didn't give her a funeral or any kind of send-off.
I feel like I kind of feel the same with her, but now it's kind of fallen. Now that you pointed out that exchange thing and she might be back, I'm like, oh, that's a good point. But there is like that element where I was hoping Clint would go, because I'm like, Clint is wrapped up. He had his Ronin. We showed how cool he is. He has his family. Yeah, they're gone. They'll be fine. You know,
he has like a Disney Plus though series.
So when it was like her getting smoked, I was, because I was like, ah, damn, that, even though we did get Gamora back before we got that moment, that real moment of having her back, I was like, damn, we lost two women to this, the same thing. But you know, that, you know, I totally forget that when we have that super, you know, dope woman moment in the final battle, which, okay, I was like, oh, y'all did it. Like, it was like when it went super fan service-y, and I was like, oh man, I don't care how many people are going to complain online about this. This is what I needed, is just seeing all of this action pop off. And then just that anime style fight with Captain Marvel and Thanos, just the anime, like, I'm going to headbutt you. And it's like, that didn't do anything. You know? But then also that, I thought it was a cool sequence of even Thanos doing the switch up of grabbing the Power Stone puncher, like he needed the power. Like, it's just so much, the fight sequence, all that. This was, you know, big moments. If you have a daughter, man, they really came at you. It was like, boom, right at the top with Scott Lang and his daughter, I was like, ouch. Boom, then you see Iron Man with his daughter, was like, oh, this moment, ouch. Boom, then you get the moment, you know, Clint, when he misses his daughter. Ouch, just back to back.
Even Thanos and his daughter.
Oh, yeah, that was too hard on
you. Oh, just, oh, kill me now.
Yeah.
Like, how do you miss it, Thanos? How do you miss it? You tore her literally apart. Like, it was crazy. But to go back to your earlier point about, like, the female empower, like, just, G. Willow Wilson is really that bitch, y'all. It's probably inappropriate to call her a bitch, but I'm so sorry. But she... She is awesome. She created the A-Force, which is the all-female Marvel team. Super dope. She-Hulk has a really prominent role in a lot of characters that we haven't yet gotten to in the Marvel Universe. But seeing these women that we've been, like, traveling with, and especially you kind of got, like, a little moment of this in Infinity War with the Natalie Okoye-Nakia fight scene. No, Scarlet Witch fight scene. But here, like, seeing all, like, six, eight of them, just tearing shit down. It was amazing. They were wonderful. I would see that moment. Like, I really just want to see the fight over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, just that moment where, like, Scarlet Witch is straight up about to murder.
I don't even know who you are.
He was about to die. He was about to die until it. And it, but it was so funny because, like, this is where the nerd brain gets in my way again, because I'm like, you're still so much stronger in the comics. You can literally be, you can snap without a
Infinity Gauntlet. Right, you don't need the Infinity Gauntlet. But I feel like,
which is why they didn't do it in the movies, because that's what they do in X-Men. They make their women too powerful and then they have to cut them off. They're always like, oh man, we made them too powerful. We have to kill them off.
But I feel like the cool thing about the way the MCU is set up is that we could get that snap eventually. Like,
yeah.
Give it like 10 to 15 years.
No, if Thanos comes back, I'm gonna be so pissed.
Not Thanos now. Oh. We get Scarlet Witch's.
Yeah, Scarlet
snap.
Witch. Okay, good.
She snaps at one point and eliminates like all of everybody with the X gene, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She doesn't even say, she says no more mutants. Just speaks the word.
And they're gone.
Like, no more mutants. And almost all of mutants are eradicated. Amazing. It's so good. Read House of M if you haven't read it yet. It leads up to that. It's so good because it and that's kind of why, like, everyone's like, I don't know why you need the X-Men. But like the stuff like House of M and Avengers versus X-Men is you have these two super teams. Like, so far in what we've learned in this movie is the Avengers go uncontested. But in a world where X-Men exists, there's a whole nother team that if they feel like the Avengers step out of line, could go toe-to-toe with them. And that's what House of M was about, is Wanda Maximoff, she has this break from reality. And the Avengers are like, yo, we gotta do something about that.
She has now reached terrorist level. Yeah. That's our territory. Yeah,
and we have to kill someone. And they're basically having this discussion of whether or not to kill her. And the X-Men are like, she's our peoples, so this is our decision. And they're having this fight. And the fight, eventually, it's very beautiful. It's the rising tensions with that. Pisses Wanda off so much that she's just like, you all these problems and everyone's trying to have control over her. It's like really looking back on it, it's really just a kind of interesting look. Like, she's just tired of all these like people in her life trying to tell her what to do, and she's like, no more mutants. And people lose their powers.
I want to say it was so, I think I was like, yeah, I think that they're going to introduce new characters. And then when I saw the roster, like when that final scene happened, of just how many characters they had to bring back to really wrap this up, I'm like, oh yeah, so it makes sense that they didn't introduce. And because I'm like, maybe they'll slide in, I don't know, maybe one of the new Avengers, like maybe, I don't know.
Who maybe the time someone bring back Quicksilver, who we really need. Bring Aaron Taylor Johnson back to the MCU. God,
but I was even like, I don't know, maybe America Chavez will show up in here. They're trying to get more, you know, queer representation. And I was like, maybe. And I just now when I looked at the whole, I was I don't think they were going to do that in Endgame.
I know.
When
after being unrightfully dragged by Hector in our previous MCU episode, when he pointed out I was complaining about the Civil War fight, this is what I wanted. That fight, when they rushed towards each other, looked like a comic book spread. I was like, this is it. I almost I had all those dad tears, and I almost burst into tears of just pure nerd happiness, because you know, you're the theater of your mind when you read these comics. You make something so exciting when you see these pictures come to life in your head, and you're like, this would be so cool as a movie, but they would never be able to do it. And to see it, like to think 10 years ago that Thanos, like, look, I know Thanos is a household name now, but Thanos, even in comics, was this cosmic level hero. Like, I was explaining like the levels to like Marvel heroes to someone, because I was like, it's crazy because Thanos is a cosmic hero. And they're like, what cosmic? I was like, oh yeah, no, you have cosmic Marvel. That's all space stuff. I was like, you get a taste of that from Guardians, but there's a whole level of that. Then you got your Avengers level, and then you got your street level, which was cool because they were building it out with all their Netflix shows. You had your street level heroes, then you had the Defenders, and now we're going to see what happens with that, you know.
We'll be on Disney Plus in 5 years.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
100%. In a different form, but Disney Plus is about to take over everything. Well, and I guess
now Sony too, because Chris Miller and Philip Lord are now doing a Marvel TV series with Sony.
Yeah, they just created like a 9-figure deal. I'm hearing rumors that there's going to be starting whole new departments of things over there for them. Yeah. It's going to be wild. I'm so excited. But like looking to your earlier point about introducing new characters, when Peter went back to high school, I swear I was looking for Kamala Khan. Like, where are you?
She might have been there.
Where are you in the background?
Maybe she's an Easter egg.
Well, I feel like they've really started to establish a group of young people for sure, who can start taking the lead in the next arc. So it'll be interesting to see.
Boy, if we give me that Young Adventures. Let's go.
Well, that's what I feel like Monica Rambeau was. That's what I feel like she's going to be when they introduced her. I mean, she has to be. So
Tony Stark's daughter, for sure.
And a 5-year time jump, too.
Yeah, because she's an adult now. It's been, if it was the 90s, then she would
she's
be.
She's 25, 30 now. Yeah.
We have to take a really quick break. We're going to hop back into Endgame in just a minute. And we're back.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so I also loved seeing that moment between Peter Parker and Tony Stark.
That was another tear moment for me. That was...
And honestly, getting to have Pepper have her moment in the suit, like truly loved that.
Yeah, having Rescue finally show up, that was beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, there was so much, oh my gosh, there was so much just dope moments sprinkled in, but I think Rescue is one of the biggest moments, because I remember that meme going around before the movie where they're like, what is Pepper Potts gonna do? Because up until this point we totally forgot about Rescue, if you think about how long ago Iron Man 3 was. So for her to show up and it's like, I'm gonna show y'all what I'm gonna do.
Their like dual moment on the battlefield was really dope.
That was beautiful. I like the Thor combo with Iron Man's suit. And of course, the scene that everybody can't stop talking about. The scene that I was at the press screen, and you know how I have, you know how people try and be there.
Wait, which time were you there?
I was there at 1.
Okay, so you're the screening. I was at the 9:00, and it was
But you know how people at press screens try and be all professional. They never laugh.
That did not happen at this guy. Okay. There were loud sobs in my theater.
Okay, because in mine there was no like all the funny moments. There was just like,
really?
Know, yeah, so there was a dude next to me clacking loud on his keyboard. Like it was like straight up. Yeah,
you're typing the review in the movie theater. Yes. Get the fuck out of the theater.
Yeah. So, but everyone's trying to be professional. When I say Cap got that hammer and everyone just lost it, it erupted, it just made it more. I'm glad people were trying to keep it together, because it made that more powerful that everyone forgot that they were trying to, you know, out here trying to pretend like they're professional. We went wild. Cap grabbing the hammer is something.
It's crazy to me, because I feel like I'm working on an article right now about what changed in Cap that made him worthy to carry the hammer versus in Avengers 1 when they all tried to pick up the hammer.
Right.
It was only Thor who was worthy, which sort of makes Thor like the only pure hero from the start, which really changes your perspective. Like Thor changed so much from Ragnarok to right the F now that I feel like there's so much more. The character has blossomed so beautifully into himself. And now we've had three people carry the hammer. Thor, Captain America, and then Vision carried it for a brief moment in Ultron, I think.
Yeah. So what is your, if you don't mind spilling,
what changed?
What do you think changed?
Because he was honest with Tony. The fact, because he knew about the Winter Soldier and killing Tony's parents.
Interesting.
And so he was lying and keeping a secret. And I think that, I'm not even sure if the hammer had a problem with it, but I think that Cap had a problem with it and would never have seen himself truly worthy, because it was his only secret from the Avengers. It was really his only betrayal of the Avengers ever. And every time after that, he's just very straightforward with him. It literally caused the civil war between them.
Yeah.
So that was a mess. So I think him coming clean about that, him kind of restoring things with Bucky, which we'll get to that in a minute. I think that his conscience is clear and he's good to move forward now.
Oh, nice. I felt it was, my thought was that he's prideful. I feel like,
interesting.
Yeah, I feel like Captain America has a lot of pride, because it takes a certain level of pride for him to just like.
Is that a negative thing?
I think he like, you know how you can be prideful and that's fine, but you just have too much pride. There's a confidence.
There's definitely a line.
And he never took an L. You know, he never took an L.
Well, he's frozen in ice for 80 years.
I mean, but that's more
losing
of a pause.
Losing the love of his life.
That's more of a pause. Like, I mean, as far as for him fighting for justice, never took an L. And Thanos handed him that L, and it made him reevaluate everything he is.
Okay.
But I like yours better.
I did like seeing Tony at the top in group therapy. Mm-hmm. The idea of, like, a man from that generation, and especially a guy that, like, a lot of maybe less woke men kind of feel is, like, the manliest man, for him to be, like, in therapy talking to dudes about feelings and being like, you know, we should open up and talk, and this is how I'm going to process my grief. I thought it was poignant and important.
Yeah, speaking of which, I'm going to touch on that moment. Like, for a hot second, it was real. For a hot second for me, it was real cool that, you know, one of the Russos did that cameo and openly talked about a gay relationship. And then it fizzled out when I was like, oh, that's just another off-screen gay relationship.
Okay, so I have two really strong feelings about it. So as a queer person, I think any attempt to celebrate this moment is like, it's our first gay character. Sit your whole ass down. Netflix has had gay characters in your Marvel series, and to overlook them is a travesty. They did really awesome work. They had on-screen relationships. They were complicated. They were much more than just being gay in a five-second moment. However, I think that by one of the Russo brothers playing the character himself is making a statement of like, we would really like to make strides in this. This is a global company. Disney has to please many, 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 many markets. You can still be killed for being queer in some places. A lot of places will not screen your movie if there is even one gay character in it. It doesn't feel like a win here, but this movie's screening everywhere. I feel like it's a win other places. And so, I definitely think people were like, no, it's great. It's like breaking down boundaries. Like, be excited. I'm not excited about it. But as far as Russo Brothers being like, you know, we want to do more of this, and we think it was important to try to fit something somewhere in here, like, hats off to that.
Yeah, and I definitely don't want to take anyone's dub away. Like, if you feel great by it, great. I just, you know, I just want to hold the bar up a little higher.
It should be much higher.
I will welcome any, you know, anything like this.
I do want to say that we've talked about men crying in media, and I did appreciate how much they had of that. Not only that scene with Joe Russo talking about how he cried, and to me it was like not even sad, it was kind of a beautiful thing to have someone, you know, sitting across from you that cries and then you cry too. And it's kind of like, this is just a state of where we're at. And I feel like it is relatable to our world sometimes today with some of the horrors going on. But then Thor repeatedly crying, like, you know, getting to see, and he's cried before, but just so openly, like you said, like the God of Thunder, this like super hyper masculine person. And that moment that he has with Hulk, where Hulk is even like, you know, you're in a rough spot, and I've been there too. And you know, who pulled me out of it? You did. I saw this movie yesterday. That's why I remember so much of these lines. But it's seeing these two super hyper masculine like men that are saying, it's okay to cry, dude, I'm here for you. And I feel like,
and they have such a bro-y relationship too.
They really, I mean, they're super bro-y. Yes. especially with Bruce and his new like you know, Hanes fitted tees, and which was funny. We got two super hulked out men in essentially like Calvin Klein soft cotton shirts, which was Thanos in his little cottage. I'm like, what is he doing? He's wearing this like Target brand whatever soft material.
For the loom V-neck classic. Yeah.
Someone pointed it out, and it is hilarious when you think about it this way. But yeah, Mans was just trying to make breakfast in it.
So funny. He has the spices. He like has a little can. He's like, I laughed out loud when he like took the little salts and spices. I like laughed.
It's such a nice touch. And also like this idea of what I like most about Thanos as a villain, and I think what steered some people in a weird direction on Ultron, like Ultron is born to do one thing and immediately like corrupts that. And it's just really basic for a robot to be like, does not compute, destroy all humans. But for Thanos, it was really like, I've seen a lot of terrible crap, and if there were less people, we would have to deal with less of this crap. It's an awful utilitarian view of the galaxy, but it's also so justified in his mind that as a villain, you're like, crap.
Yeah, someone described,
you don't really get away with this.
Someone tweeted this, and it made so much sense. Is Thanos is a simple solution for a complex problem, which is essentially fascism. Like he is a metaphor for fascism, a simple solution for a complex problem. Oh, there's too many people, just kill half of them. And I'm not going to look, so I'm being fair.
Mm-hmm.
Are you?
Yeah, it's random
because
selection.
You're not allowing yourself to be selected in that. You're not allowing any of your daughters to be selected. As a matter of fact, you didn't allow any of your homies to get snapped. Mm-hmm. You just said half of anyone except me.
Although I think his homies, all he would half their civilization and then pick his favorites.
Yeah.
Yeah, I truly don't think that he cares. I mean, and also like sacrificing Gamora, he clearly doesn't.
I mean, he does. He essentially had to care for that to have worked.
Well, but it's so interesting that part of it, because I was thinking that too. It was like sacrifice what you love. The fact that Nat and Clint, like that was so, one, that could have been really awkward. Yeah.
Like, what if they both fell?
No, but like, what if one of them didn't, like, and it was like, yeah. Oh, you didn't actually love them, so you didn't get the stone.
That would be hella awkward. I would have been floored if something like that happened. But it's also crazy to me because in Nat and Clint, the sacrifice was a self-sacrifice.
Yeah.
And so, it feels really weird to me that that worked.
That's exactly what I mean, though, is about like how, because I was weighing this in my head. I was trying to understand this part. Like, what if they had done Rhodes and Nebula had switched? Like, what if they were the ones that were going to the Soul Stones?
They'd have been effed.
Right? Yeah. So I was trying to like weigh that in my head of like, how is this working? And essentially Nat pushed herself off.
Although he saves her and then she says, let me go, right?
Yeah.
And so he does have to physically do the letting go. So, okay.
No, she twisted her hand out of him and she kicked herself off of him. Anyways, we're getting really specific here.
I think it's important. There's a lot of like little detail moments.
I was thinking of that exact, that like thought was in my head of like, oh, how is this going to work? And does it need to be someone like as in Clint's wife or somebody like his child? Or I guess it's just like a friend that he loves. Yeah.
I think it's anyone you'd say, I love you. it doesn't have to be a deep thing.
But also there's no relationship with anybody he has like he has with Nat. Like, his wife is his wife and that's his life partner. But Nat and him have both been through the grime. And he essentially turned into Nat after the snap, what she was doing like before she got into the Avengers.
Right.
And so I think that they're the only ones who could fully understand each other's entire stories.
Here's something that someone brought up in the Discord that was something I did note. I even mentioned it in the candy dinner episode, so I'm just gonna mention it again. It was kind of weird he was only going after major people of color gangs. like it was the cartel.
Yeah.
And then it was
Yakuza. Oh no, F that for life. Yeah. I was like, we have like homegrown white national terrorists.
Exactly.
Right here.
I'm like, that's you start you one, went all like, the way to Mexico, my guy.
You didn't go to Japan just to kill people.
But in the end, it was like those are like the media cooler like ones. And obviously that's by design because of things like this. But it's like, we all know Sicario and we all know Yakuza. And it's like, all right, but you
honestly,
can
feel like
do
they were
one,
like Japan makes a really cool backdrop. 100%,
especially since that's his total aesthetic too.
Yeah, it is.
Because he's Roman. Remember, and he has the, let's have him have this samurai sword battle.
Oh, it's
at least
so
let
cool.
my guy, you know, go toe to toe a little bit and not get sliced up.
Listen, here's my other problem is like, I don't feel like Jeremy Renner embodied like a Ronin very well. Like, even his like sword movements, I've just watched way too much like anime and like Japanese shows to be like, this doesn't feel right. It's like really stiff. You know, I didn't care for the storyline at all. I just don't. It might just be my issues with Jeremy Renner. I just didn't like it. I didn't care for it.
Wait, you got beef
it.
With Jeremy Renner?
I don't even have beef with Jeremy Renner. I just don't enjoy him very much.
All right.
I find him kind of bland. I thought Hawkeye had a lot of the same problems as Black Widow. It's just never really gotten fleshed out. And they get you with like, it's his family, so it's going to be painful. And everybody can identify because most people have a family.
Yeah.
Except for Natasha.
Oh, Natasha. So yeah, I don't know.
Well, I honestly thought like a part of me was like, that's why they killed her, because she doesn't have a family, you know? And so I thought that was really fascinating. Not to go back to that scene, but I just, I don't know why it really just stuck out to me as like, who's going to die? And Clint was like, it should be me. But he was the one that had kids and a wife and kids. And then it was kind of a bad commentary about us that aren't married with kids.
Yes.
And it's like,
your
it's
lives are easily disposed.
And I'm not saying that. It just was like something that I took as an unmarried woman of like, oh, if I, you know, when you're watching these scenarios, they're like, oh, I guess if it were us, I guess I should sacrifice myself because you have a family. That makes sense.
I should sacrifice myself because I got a family.
And so that, but honestly, like, it wasn't even a bad, it was just like, you know, you put yourself in this scenario, this apocalyptic scenario of would I do this?
Yeah, to go back to the New York Times articles, the writers were talking about how they're like, it would have just been way too melodramatic to introduce Clint at as the top, watch his family disappear,
and then have him go on this himself. Whole
like dark rage, okay, so they address and then that. Die. Yeah, they were like, it was just too melodramatic, and you know, the way they had set up with, you know, her being like a reclusive and like this is your only family, like it makes sense for her to want to do like one good thing. And I guess for my money, I understood what Nat was doing. Like this whole time, the one good thing we have seen about her doing is constantly trying to be a part of the team.
Yeah.
And it seems consistent that she was trying to convince herself more than anyone that she was belonged here and right. was a part of the team.
Yeah.
We saw her try it with Nick when she was like, you're gone and that's not cool. You're essentially my surrogate father. I don't like that. Then we saw it with Cap when she was like, no, we're going to help get you acclimated to this new world. You don't need to worry. We saw her all the time with Hawkeye. And so for her to be like, no, this is something I want to do, it makes sense for her character. I wasn't too upset at her death. I just wish we had more of her before it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We have to take another break, and then we're going to hop into the rest of Endgame right after
we'll
this.
We'll get to the end of Endgame.
And we're back, and I know that everyone has talked about time travel. I've seen a lot of conversations about it. To me, I think if we were talking in the Discord, it kind of follows me DBZ time travel laws.
Where you could just pop up and leave as you please.
No. Where if you go into a different, it was kind of what, I forgot her name. Who's the bald?
The ancient one?
Yeah. The ancient one. It was kind of what the ancient one was saying. If you affect this timeline, like you're not, you might be helping your timeline, but you're going to forever change the other timelines. This was my main question with, even though Cap went back and put all the stones back, Gamora. Okay, so Gamora is dead in the current timeline.
Yes.
The one that we have is 2014 Gamora. Mm-hmm. So that timeline, that Peter Quill that we saw get punched out, he will never fall in love with Gamora.
No.
If she stays in our timeline, which I think she will. I think she's going to be in the next Guardians. I think she's going to, I think Peter's going to fall, like, I think she's going to fall in love with Peter again. I think that she has no reason to go back to 2014. Her sister is dead. Her dad is dead. I think Nebula, the current Nebula is in this time. So 2014 Gamora, I think, is going to stay in this time. But what I'm saying is it's kind of sad for that Peter Quill,
who this down for me. So there's two timeline theories they give you in the film, and that's why it's confusing, and you had to be paying really close attention. So the first timeline theory is when you projected the ancient one was like, listen, if you remove things, you're going to F up and create a second timeline. That's what I was thinking about the whole movie. But Ash Crossman was like, yeah, okay, but remember when Banner is having the conversation about time travel, where essentially he says, whatever you change just makes a change. So like, if your past self comes to the future, then your future becomes your past, and now you've created a new arc for yourself. So it's the same reason why Nebula isn't dead right now, which makes me upset because I'm not an astrophysicist and I can't quite write it in my mind. You killed yourself, so you should be dead.
Yeah.
Both of you should have dropped.
She created a different timeline.
Well, it's even more so. It's not necessarily creating a different timeline, because that is what I was going to quote, is basically what Hulk was saying was this idea of you going back in time, changing things, and it affecting your future isn't true, because that moment where you go back in time is now your future.
Right.
It is not necessarily creating a new timeline. It's almost as if you started it and went back and added it to your current timeline.
Right.
So you experienced everything up until that point and came, but everything that changes is just new. If that makes sense.
But that timeline is still affected. The one that you pulled.
You've already left it.
No, the one that you pulled Gamora out of, she doesn't exist. She's not in 2014 anymore. If she stays in the present day, there's not still a Gamora in 2014.
According to the Hulk, the way he said it, 2014 already happened. So you're just pulling Gamora into 2019, but all the events are almost destined. They've already happened. So you don't interrupt that.
So basically my only question was, okay, so Peter will still get to have a Gamora and he probably will also get this Gamora. Yeah. Like, so I do think that she's going to, this is my thing that I'm going to project that we've talked a little bit in Discord. I do think she's going to pop back up in Guardians. I think was a little Easter egg that they showed when it said searching for Gamora at the very end when, you know, when Thor came onto the ship, when Peter was looking.
It
said searching for, he was looking for Gamora. And I think that was an Easter egg of she's going to pop up. She might not be leaving the ship with them, with Nebula and Thor. And Quill and Rocket and Groot, but I think that she will. I think that was the best way for them to be like, oh, she's not dead. How are we going to get her back in here? How are we going to, you know, finish out this franchise? And I think that was the way.
Yeah. Also, I'd imagine like Gamora, if you went back to 2014 Gamora, and she just got realized that she's in the future and she's into this guy, she's not going to just go back on the ship. I think she's like, leave.
Right. Like, totally.
Gamora needs some time. Because, like, if you go back and watch the Guardians, like, in the first one, it's all about, like, we could be a team. And, you know, if you want to go after your father, that's a thing we could do too. Like, but, like, let's just try to figure this out. And then part two was all about, like, we just have to admit that we love each other. Like, can we just say the words and believe it? It'll be okay. And so I think the next one will be about him trying to figure out how to get her in a way that isn't brought together by tragedy, which will be really interesting because Gamora's entire life has just been like one long tragic event. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now she's on her own and she's got this like level of independence. And I think that Peter's going to have to come to terms with that and give her like space and time to figure out what she wants before she could even possibly begin to be in a relationship. Like, what a crazy thing to be pulled out of time, meet your sister, kind of become sisters, kill your father together, and then find out you have this entire life that you can't remember. It's just wild.
I just realized that we had two women that killed themselves because Natasha killed herself and Nebula killed herself, even though it wasn't like her, but she killed the other version of herself. I thought the saddest part of that when they were like, you know, you can change, and she was like, he won't let me. And it was just so, her character arc is just so tragic. It really is. And so it's at least exciting, even though that Nebula didn't survive, that this new Nebula with the next Guardians, I'm excited to see what will become of her character.
Yeah, it's cool. It's exciting because, like, even though she died, she was really just killing off a part of herself she never liked anyway. And it's to me, it's so much less tragic because it's something that she always wanted to shed. Even the self, who's like, I can't change, desires to, wants to. And so for her to be like, you know, this is gone and I'm just going to be whoever I want to be, it's exciting. And I hope I really like her in Guardians 2 when she's like finally on her own and it's like, I'm going to just sell these people and I'm over it. She's so badass. And I think we're going to get a lot of that kind of like fun, badass Nebula that we haven't had a lot of time with.
I loved, aside from the Cap versus Cap fight, the Nebula versus Nebula fight. And then when she smacks her and she's like, you're weak. And she's like, I'm you. And I was like, oh, that's such a good line.
Yeah, yeah, I'd like that too.
That was so like such a, put in your face. So many of those.
It was so good too because there were so many like fun breadcrumbs that are just you're basically a lot of decisions were made based off of things established way long. Like the fact, like, you can sit there and be like, why was it so easy for Gamora to just switch sides? Or you can go back and watch the movies and know that she never was on his side.
Never.
So it was so like the moment like she was like, yo, Thanos is trash. You knew like, oh, she's going to turn. Like there was no, and I like that they did honor that. They didn't add no extra convincing. She just needed to hear that one line from the future to confirm like it's bad if he wins, because all the other movies have confirmed that Gamora never really was rocking with him.
And
like
Nebula
that.
Has figured out how to talk to her sister in such a way that she would be able to convince her in a couple of short. Like, it took her so long to figure out, like, how do I say I want to be your sister? You know, you've hurt me so much. I don't know how to forgive you for that and also seek this relationship. But she's already lived all that and gotten over it, so she can just meet her, like, right where she is, which is great.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm just so excited about the good storytelling. But just also the simple fact that all she needed to get Gamora on her side is to be like, in the future, we're good.
We're cool.
And honors that. That's all Gamora wanted. Mm-hmm. Gamora, that's one thing I do like about Gamora and Nebula Sterling, because it's such a relatable sibling storyline of like, y'all both kind of want the same thing, but you're mad at each other and you don't know why. Mm-hmm. And you see so many siblings pit together that way. You know, if you were the sibling that got better grades, your sister, your little sibling hates you and you don't know why. You're just trying to be good and you're trying to connect and they don't want to connect with you because, and it's all because of just how the parents kind of treat that. But you don't have any of that info, so you're just trying to communicate until you finally break through. So the fact that like Nebula came into this movie with the information of like, oh, she does love me. She just doesn't know why I do not like her. So if I just tell her I just like that. It's just such a product of good storytelling.
Speaking of good storytelling and complicated siblings, can we talk about Loki's sneak off? It kills me. It was so much.
It was, like I said, there's a lot of fan service in this movie, and that was the most Loki fan service you could do of seeing him do be like, okay.
Like the classic, like, oh my gosh, vaudevillian, like, creeper stalk off, like he's on tippy toes, hunched over, like sneaking out of frame. I'm like, this is comedic gold.
Yeah,
and it sets up so like I feel like the way they like left little threads for the Disney Plus series, I was like, give me totally. These morsels. Like even Scarlet Witch's big moment, we know that is it WandaVision? Oh God, why didn't you call it Scarlet Vision, Disney? I'd never understand your decisions. But WandaVision is coming, and I feel like with the stones being placed back, we could be very close to having the resurrection of Vision. She got such a great line of just, you know, you've ruined my life.
I know, you've taken everything.
Oh my gosh.
So freaking good.
You know, we're getting towards the end of this, and I do want to wrap up one last thing, another relationship thing that I thought closed up years. Almost got me in my feels, was Tony and his dad.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord, I
because
cried.
That was, it, like, he just, it was years of everything he thought about his father being cleared up. The moment he was like, I will do anything for that kid.
Yeah.
And I'm just so consumed by my work that I cannot focus on him. But I do love that kid. I was like, oh my God, he needed to hear that.
Have you rewatched the scene from Civil War at the top where he creates this thing called BARF, which is a binary automated something or other. Basically, it's the thing he creates that connects to his hippocampus and it projects his parents. And he gets to tell his parents, it's the last time he saw his parents. It's when they do the young Robert Downey Jr. And he gets to tell his parents like what he always wanted to say before they died, which was essentially Tony's actual words to him were like, it's okay, Dad. You did the best you could,
mm-hmm.
right? We can hear the last line he says to his dad is almost identical, but instead of just a walk-off, his dad gets to respond. And if that doesn't just give you the shivers, like, I just wrote this article about the legacy of Tony Stark because it didn't strike me how much I liked the character until his journey ended. Because to me, I'm like, rich, entitled, white douchebag. Like, okay, it's fine. Like, Robert Downey Jr. is infectious. Like, you love his performance. You want to watch him. He's, like, a wonderful performer. But Tony Stark is constantly just running headlong into decisions and making giant mistakes and then really getting mad when people are like, he wants to clean up his own mistakes, but he doesn't want to really take responsibility ever.
Yes.
You know, he's sorry that it happened, but like, I'll correct it and I'll do it by myself and it'll all be fine. And that constant like tripping over himself is always causing problems. And it's what makes his final snap so peak perfect because one, he's got the assurance that this is the only way. And we've seen Tony constantly through every Iron Man movie, through every Avengers movie, put his body on the line. He's willing to die for this cause, but it's never really been worth it. You didn't ever really have to. You were never going to be the leader that Captain America just naturally was, but you didn't need to be. You were a rebel and a patriot. And that is so American and so close to the ideals that Captain America holds to his heart. It's so close to what your dad was always trying to achieve. Like all these heroes that he felt were so far away from him gave him the respect. I mean, the fact that what Cap does with his life after is just value Tony's message and Tony's agenda. And he's like, I'm just going to go and live a simple life because we all deserve to have that at some point. It is the most miraculous arc. Like, it is, I hope that eventually we can get this with all of the characters.
Oh, yeah.
But the way they did it with Tony it was pitch perfect.
But the most, I think the thing that made it the most perfect, the icing on the top is the fact that Tony ends the way the MCU started. The MCU started at the end of Iron Man when he says, I am Iron Man.
Yeah.
And the last line that Tony Stark says in the MCU is, I am Iron Man. I got to breathe a second or I'm going to just
even
lose it.
Even the bird's reaction of, it's okay, you could just go.
Yeah, you can rest now.
Let's talk about that performance. I compared this this performance akin to Jackie O during Kennedy's death, which if you don't remember or you don't have to go look it up. I will explain what happens. She jumps to the back of the car and to grab a piece of his head. And when asked why, I was like, I didn't know. I just went into mode and I just thought it would help. And there's something about seeing Pepper Potts just, everyone's freaking out and she's like, goes into full seriousness. She puts all her emotions aside because she's like, this is all he needs to hear right now. And the moment she passes away, then her real emotion comes in. That performance and just the realness of that, of just like, in a crisis time, you're like, no, first business, then me.
Yeah. And she has to stay strong because that's the last face that he saw. You know, she put her face, like she moved, not that I don't love Peter Parker, but she moved Peter Parker to the side very much, like gave him over, like someone needs to take care of this kid. This is my time to be with my husband. Like, this is my time to be with the one that...
You don't need to be here right now, Peter. Like, this is, you don't need to see your mentor die.
Yeah, this is, and so she made sure, that is like so important. She was like this, she is the last face he's going to see. And in order for him to rest, in order, he can't see her crying and feeling like everything's going to go, you know, he needs to see her okay. And she says, we're going to be okay.
But also in going in this great writing and constantly flipping the script, every single time that Tony's put his life on the line, he calls Pepper. And every single time she can't pick up the phone because she's always trying to save him. She's always trying to get back to him to save him. So this idea of this is the last, and we even see it at the top of this film. And even after he dies, he leaves her a message. He's always trying to reach Pepper. And so this idea that as he's dying, he doesn't have to reach her. He's right. She's right there for him. And she's the one giving him the message of it's going to be okay and you can be strong and you can do what you need to do. It's just really beautiful. Like their relationship, as minimal as it's been, it's been really lovely to watch.
Yeah.
And the, I think the last tiny thing I'm going to say about Marvel in the MCU is just how awesome and dynamic. Not was it not only as a story, what it told, but also for Robert Downey Jr.'s career.
Yeah.
This MCU changed his life.
Yes.
He was like the laughingstock burnout in Hollywood. And I mean,
in rehab,
he had a bang. He was on the rise, but
he definitely, like, you know, and not like trying to trash him. I'm just saying, like, that's just where he was to, like, this untouchable superstar who seems like he might be getting ready to retire. He can if he wants, or he can do whatever movie he wants. I just love just someone getting a second chance, like doing the work. Getting a second chance and really showing us just how great he was, because not only was this a great movie, but his performance from when he's malnourished and this to coming back, like you really, it was great. And I didn't get to tweet this out, but what I wanted to say is Endgame felt like everyone saw Black Panther get that Oscar nod and was like, oh, all right, let's go.
We're gonna be real
because everyone brought their acting game. Like it transcended a quote unquote superhero movie to, like, as an actor, it inspired me.
I also love the fact that Tony is so much of Robert Downey Jr. Yes. Like the fact that this man did get a second chance at life. Robert Downey Jr., who was an alcoholic, and he played an alcoholic in Tony Stark, and like a man who's tormented, who has pushed people away in his life to then come full circle in the way that I feel like, you know, Robert Downey Jr. has. I was told that, and I didn't know, one, he had to like fight to audition for this, and I know that Jon Favreau really believed in him, so he was a huge win at the premiere. Jon Favreau, when they announced him, like everybody like gave him a roaring applause, because without him, I don't think that we would have.
I didn't know that, and that makes Happy and Tony's relationship so much better, like so much sweeter.
And then I think that they wanted to go. Marvel wanted to go with Tom Cruise, so that would have been a totally different. I had this argument with Mark Ellis, who is a good friend of mine. He was on our Infinity War review, I believe. He's the one that told me that, and he was like, "What? No, don't try." And I'm like, "No, Mark." It was so funny. Someone tweeted and was like, "The characters are not the actors. Like Chris Hemsworth is not Thor, and Mark Ruffalo is not Hulk, but Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark." He is him. Yeah. Everybody else is just, but he is one with,
I mean, I
can't imagine anyone
Marvel
else.
Has
and we
made,
don't, yeah.
Marvel made all the royalty in the world we know, people of color. Actually, they're all black people, and it made me want to cry. Valkyrie is king of Asgard right now. Namor, when Okoye was like, we're not worrying about those earthquakes. We don't do anything about the earthquakes. Don't check them out. Don't look. I was like, Namor is coming. The Submariner's here. Like, the way, again, they just set up so many, like, little threads and little things for us to be so excited about, and then for them to not give us anything at the end just tells me that they are cooking.
I know.
And I just cannot wait to see what the next phase is going to bring, where their focus is going to be. But I think even as small as the queer representation was, the amount of POC that had really, like, monumental positions in the Avengers now, including Sam getting Captain Shield, I feel like they're making a very strong statement at the end of the Infinity Saga of, like, yeah, we're coming for, like, disenfranchised people next. We know our first half was very Caucasian. It was very straight. But we see you, and we're going to expand. So I really look forward to it.
Yay.
How's everybody doing?
No, I think that's our...
That's it. What did y'all think? Tweet at us. You know, in the Discord, we're already got the conversation going. So discord.gg/saltsquad. Spoiler chat. Danny was getting it in. I knew I missed. I think I came back to like 200 messages.
Damn. It was about the time travel thing.
Yeah, everybody went
in. It was Gamora. I was like, no, she's coming back. Trust me. Oh, even though my original question was like, is she coming back? And then I was like, I thought y'all were going to say she was. And this is why I need to prove to you that she is.
Yeah, Danny had charts and everything. but yeah, you know me, if you wide away, IFYNWADIDBU. On Twitter and Instagram. This is out this week, so this Saturday, if you are in the Phoenix area, me and the White Women Guys will be performing at the Phoenix Improv Fest, so def pull up for that. As always, catch a boy on Twitch, IfDeez, IfDeeez. We're always doing some fun stuff in there. Carl has popped on for Sports Game. Carl Tart of Culture Kings, Comedy Bang Bang, all that. And you know, you never know. Danny's going to pop on soon, and you before you even know it, you'll be chatting with us when we play some video games.
Yay.
But, yeah, come through, drop that sub. Remember, Twitch Prime subs, you got to come back every month unless you upgraded to a regular sub, which will just do it automatically if you're just like, I want to support Iffy, but I ain't got time to see you sit up yelling at the screen. I feel like there were a few people who stopped by and followed while I was in the middle of yelling about a game. Like, it was just me yelling mad. I think it was the final boss for Far Cry New Dawn.
Sounds very entertaining.
So mad. I was so mad. I was cursing. Which, you know, if you listen to Nerdivs, and that's a whole new side of me that you're getting to learn. People come into my chat and they're like, can we curse here? I was like, yeah.
Let it rip.
Yeah, sorry. I went on a huge tangent yet again.
That's okay. The only thing that I was going to plug is I wrote a really personal piece on how Endgame tackled failure, loss, and depression as someone that has depression, and that is up on Playboy that you can check out and read.
Yeet.
I'm at Ms. Danny Fernandez. Joelle, where can everyone catch you?
Yes, so many places. Come, join me on Twitter. I'm there 16 hours a day. I'm addicted. I live there. Joke
you say
with
Twitter?
Me. Yes.
Me too. You know
it's
me.
It's at Joelle Monique. It's so easy to find us. We're always there. Yeah, and also I'll be in Ontario, California doing Comic-Con Revolution. It's going to be really awesome. I have 4 panels there. It's like Ladies of the Dark Side. We're doing a tribute to Stan Lee. I'm interviewing the guys of... Samurai Jack, and then also the voice of Darth Maul. So it's going to be like a whole stacked Saturday. You could just come follow me panel to panel. It's a really great con. It's super small, and most of the creators like hang out afterwards and talk to people. It's intimate and lovely. So if you see there, say, if you're there, say hi. Yeah.
And that's it. Like we always say, stay nerdy.